happen in the motorcade route. Something, I repeat, has happened in the motorcade route.
From Dallas, Texas, the flash, apparently official, President Kennedy died at 1 p.m. Central Standard Time.
One of the things that I wanted to talk to you about is the JFK files. And one of the things that you said was that if they showed you what they showed me, this was your quote, you wouldn't want people to know it either.
So I opened them up partially. I was met with, from good people, I mean, you know, look, I mean, good people. People that were well-meaning. Mike Pompeo was one of them. He's a good person. They called me, they said, sir, would rather have you not. After, and I did open them, but I was asked by some people not to open them. There's a Martin Luther King file, too, by the way, that they'd like to see. I don't know if you know, but there is that. But JFK in particular. So they called me, a lot of good people called me, people that I, you know, that you would find reasonable people, and they asked me not to do it. So I said, well, we'll close it for another time. But if I win, I'm going to open them up. I'm just going to open enough time.
Why didn't you open it up the first time?
Because
what was the hesitation, though?
Addresses, people that are still living. There are people that are affected. And there could be some national security reason that that I don't have to necessarily know about. But some very good, talented people asked me not to do it. I opened it up, and then they said, would it be possible for us to do that a different day?
How much of it did you read into?
I think it's going to be just fine to open it. Let me put it that way. I think it's fine. It's going to be time. It's a cleansing. You know, it's really a cleansing. So I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it immediately, almost immediately upon entering office.
Well, the thing, when people look at it from the outside and you sort of imagine what could be a reason why they would not release those files, it would be there's people that were implicated
in the
assassination.
Yeah. Well, when there are living people, you generally tend not to want to do it. When people are still living.
Living people that formerly worked for the government.
For the government and living people that were somehow involved in it. And you tend not to do that. But it's time to open them. I can't tell you whether or not they're going to find anything of interest. And I did partially open. I think I've opened 50%. But I was asked not to do it. And I thought that was a reasonable ask, but now I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it very soon.
Sir, we have an executive order ordering the declassification of files relating to the assassinations of President John F. Kennedy, Senator Robert F. Kennedy, and the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.
That's a big one, huh? A lot of people are waiting for this for years, for decades. And everything will be revealed. Okay? Give that to RFK Jr.
Okay, sir.
Okay.
You think that that's the right move to declassify those?
I think it's a great move because we need to have more transparency in our government, and he's keeping his promise to have the government tell the truth to the American people about everything.
At 1:25, the motorcade moves into the downtown area. Death is 6 minutes away. In a warehouse, a sniper with a rifle poised waits.
This is the president was assassinated, and then the assassin got assassinated. It's like, how the hell do we not know what actually happened?
Organized crime helped silence the CIA pawn, Lee Harvey Oswald.
It was inadequate work on the part of the CIA and the FBI in terms of following up on Oswald.
I just remember my father saying, don't feel bad about these guys were rats. They double-crossed us. People in the mob hated Kennedys.
You actually went to the Dallas Book Depository and you tried to make the shot yourself and you concluded it wasn't an impossible shot.
Nobody wants to believe that something of that magnitude could take place with one person. It has to be a bigger story. Regardless of what is in this next release of documentation, I don't know that it's going to end up satisfying a lot of people.
You know, if you want to understand what's going to be released, you need to understand what's been released recently. And the files that have been released in recent years show that the government's official story, a lone gunman, is simply not true. And something else happened to President Kennedy. So people want to know the answer. And Trump's tapping into that feeling by saying, let's put it all out there and figure out, you know, what really happened. The official story is not true. So I think that it seems like the president was killed by enemies in his own government, opponents of his policies in Cuba, in Vietnam, with the Soviet Union. They felt he was a threat, and this was the solution to the threat that they perceived. So that's my sense of it, but I could be wrong. Let's see all the documents and we'll know.
Welcome to The End of Innocence. I'm your host, John Young. Man, have I been bombarded with emails about the release of the remaining assassination records, as I'm sure many other researchers have also. Of course, the first question that's on everyone's mind is what are we going to get with the new release of documents that President Trump has ordered? Well, let's go over a little bit of the particulars of the order itself. President Trump ordered the Director of National Intelligence and the Attorney General to develop a plan within 15 days to declassify the remaining John F. Kennedy assassination records and a plan within 45 days for the other two assassinations of Robert F. Kennedy and Martin Luther King Jr. I say at least we have some movement with possibly seeing some documents that researchers haven't had up to this point. Now, will all the documents really be released as President Trump has indicated? Well, unfortunately, I don't think we have much of a chance to get all the documents released. But maybe we get some information and documents released that would give researchers something that they didn't already know, or at least give us some indication that there's more work to be done. Over the past 10 days or so, I have listened to dozens of podcasts and interviews from numerous researchers and historians about the upcoming release of records that are still being held that pertain to the JFK assassination. One podcast in particular caught my attention, and I thought I would share with you some brief snippets from that today. Piers Morgan brought together a few people with different opinions when it comes to the assassination and had them share their thoughts not only on the records release, but the assassination itself. His guests included Jefferson Morley, who is a well-known researcher and former Washington Post reporter. He is also the author of several books on the JFK assassination and history of the CIA. You heard Morley's opinion of what happened to JFK a few minutes ago. Another guest on the program was Michael Franzese, who is a former mobster in the Colombo crime family in New York City. He is the son of former underboss Sonny Franzese. Franzese became a born-again Christian in prison, and soon after he was released, he walked away from the mob and retired to California. He became a motivational speaker, commentator, and writer. As you will hear, he thinks the mob played a critical role in the killing of John F. Kennedy. And lastly, there's Michael Baker, who is a former CIA officer. Baker spent approximately 15 years working with the CIA. He worked as a covert field operations officer specializing in counterterrorism. So on today's episode, in between some of my commentary, you will hear brief snippets from some of these individuals. You will be able to tell by what they are saying, who they are, and what side of the fence they lean on.
Let me start with you, if I may, Jefferson. You've written a lot about this. Your belief is that the most likely theory, and we may discover more meat on this theory bone, is that JFK was killed by enemies within the United States government.
That's what the preponderance of evidence that's come out in the last 20 years tells us.
So explain to those who are not as expert as you are, just explain, right, Jefferson, to those who have not as read as much as you have, but what are the key things that have emerged in the last 20 years that have led you to that conclusion?
Three things. One is the testimony of the doctors who tried to save Kennedy's life. These seven doctors didn't really talk publicly until they got together in 2011, 2010. And their views are expressed on an excellent documentary on Paramount Plus called What the Doctors Saw. And those doctors who tried to save Kennedy's life, who examined his wounds in the 30 minutes before he died, said unanimously that Kennedy had been hit by gunfire from two different directions. So right there, that is powerful refutation of the government's already weak lone gunman theory. A second thing that I think is very important, and we only learned in 2017, the CIA itself did not believe the lone gunman theory. A few days after Kennedy was assassinated, the CIA station in Miami launched its own internal investigation of Kennedy's death. They did not investigate Lee Harvey Oswald. They did not investigate organized crime. They didn't investigate the KGB. They didn't investigate Fidel Castro. They investigated exiles known to the CIA in South Florida. And that report, the findings of that internal investigation, were never released. And finally, in April 2023, the CIA's pre-assassination file on Lee Harvey Oswald was completely declassified for the first time. Imagine that. The so-called lone gunman, his file was so sensitive that it took 61 years to totally declassify it. What does that file show us? It's not a smoking gun, but it does show that Oswald was not, repeat, not a lone nut. He was a known quantity, known to a handful of CIA officers working for counterintelligence chief James Angleton. So with that as the fact pattern that we now have, that the Warren Commission conclusion is not correct and something else happened, I think what we're going to find out is in these files that are to come, we're going to see more of the fact pattern that has emerged in the last 20 years, that the Warren Commission is wrong and something else happened involving, probably involving people in the U.S. government.
One huge question I have is, will Lee Harvey Oswald's tax returns be released? Will Michael and Ruth Payne's tax returns be released? I mean, why would ordinary citizens, like the Warren Commission says the Paynes were, why would their tax returns be classified 61 years later, unless it shows they were being paid by the CIA or FBI or some kind of intelligence agency? The CIA opened a 201 file, which is a file that is open on anyone whom the agency has either contact with or is interested in. The 201 file on Oswald was opened in December 1960 under the misnomer Lee Henry Oswald. This was several months after his alleged defection to the Soviet Union. We know that the CIA had information on Oswald that long predates the opening of this file. This information was held in a super-secret office of the CIA known as CISIG, or Counterintelligence Special Investigations Group. Would the FBI give up information that would prove or disprove the fact that Lee Harvey Oswald was an FBI informant? By the way, his FBI employee number was S-179. And his CIA employee number was 110669. The FBI paid him $200 a month. His CIA salary has never been revealed. But let's face it, there's no way the FBI or CIA lets that information get released. We're not going to get tax returns. I don't think we will get information about Ruth and Michael Payne on their relationship with the intelligence agencies, especially since Ruth is still alive, living in a Quaker community in Santa Rosa, California.
Mike Baker, you are a former CIA officer. When you hear these theories that maybe it was an inside job effectively by the US government, maybe the CIA were involved, do you think that's even remotely feasible?
Well, look, never say never, right? And one thing I've learned in 40 years of investigations and operations is, until you've got all the evidence in front of you, you can't rule anything out. Right? Yes. I mean, that's good common sense. I have a feeling, though, once they release the remaining documents, and I think people should understand that a vast majority of the documents have already been released, right? So we're not talking about a lot of records here, right? And my concern is that there won't be a smoking gun, as we just mentioned. But I think that, it won't stop a variety of the conspiracy theories. I think it's going to be an unsatisfactory release is what I guess I'm saying here. I think what it will show is what was just pointed out was, yes, Lee Harvey Oswald was a known quantity for a reason, for a counterintelligence reason, right? He had moved over to the Soviet Union. He had lived there in an unsatisfactory manner in his mind for some time. He had traveled down to Mexico weeks before the assassination to meet with the Cuban consulate. He was desperate to prove his value to the revolution. Right. So, yes, he was known. So, and I think what the release of the documents may show, as opposed to a smoking gun and satisfy all the various conspiracy theories, is that it was inadequate work on the part of the CIA and the FBI in terms of following up on Lee Harvey Oswald. You can never say never until you have all the evidence in front of you. So I'm not drawing a line under this and saying we know for a fact what happened. I'm just saying that the release of the remaining documents will probably not be a satisfying experience.
We know that a lot of documents that we really wish we had access to almost certainly have been destroyed. We can look as an example, for instance, to Richard Helms, who was the CIA director from 1966 to 1973. He testified before Congress and admitted that he had destroyed a lot of files that were associated with the MKUltra project that the CIA was illegally running in the United States. If the truth were really known, the CIA and FBI certainly have destroyed many of the files that would be most useful to researchers in order to really understand the JFK assassination. But again, that's information that you know we can't really worry about at this point. One of the things that I'm going to be looking for with the new documents is going to be the relationship between the CIA and organized crime. We know, of course, that the CIA had contracted the mob through Sam Giacconi and Johnny Roselli to set up the assassination of Fidel Castro. So it'll be interesting to look if any of the files associated with that relationship are released.
Bring in Michael Francis, if you're waiting very patiently. I want to tee you up, Michael, by playing a clip. This is RFK Jr.'s daughter-in-law who is come out and said this to Tucker Carlson. Let's take a look.
And I feel something of a responsibility to get to the bottom of that, at least in my lifetime, for my children. You know, I mean, my daughter Bobcat is Bobby the Fourth. So her great-grandfather was RFK. And I want to be able to look at her and for her to know whether or not her own government was involved in these assassinations. And if so, what's been done about it to make sure that that never, ever happens again, that there's never a coup like that in this country again. And I think when you look at collaboration that was going on in those days between the intelligence community and organized crime and the mob, you know, there were very blurry boundaries.
Michael, you know, you said if you believe Lee Harvey Oswald acted alone, then you believe in Santa Claus. One of the big theories, of course, is that both the Kennedy brothers were, you know, thick as thieves with a lot of the mob, and that this was not a connection that should be ruled out. Explain why you think this might be one of the theories, and it may be we get more information about that if these files get released.
Well, Pierce, I can only tell you what I've heard my entire life, and that was from the time Kennedy got killed. You know, we hated, people in the mob hated Kennedys, you know, and normally guys in the mob don't want to take credit for things like this. They'd rather not talk about it. Not the thugs. I mean, the people in charge, people like Carmine Persico, who was the boss of the Colombo family, Tony Salerno, boss of the Genovese family, and my father, who was very high up at the time. You know, it goes back. I was 12 years old when Kennedy got killed, and I just remember my father saying things to my mother. Don't feel bad about these guys were rats. They double-crossed us and so on and so forth. Cut to the time that I was in the life. And, you know, I heard consistently from Persico, from Tony, from my father, that what I believe it came down is that the CIA had come to, they said the CIA, people in government who were part of this assassination plot with the Kennedys, came to us afterwards and asked that Oswald be killed.
Also, we know an awful lot now that the CIA was using churches and church statuses in order to hide a lot of the illegal operations. These operations were ran by the more militant Cuban paramilitary groups, like Alpha 66 that started in Miami and then branched out to Dallas and other cities. We know that there was a lot of use of fake churches' titles and the fake churches' statuses in order to be able to hide what the CIA was doing with these paramilitary groups in separate cities. So I'll be looking to see if there's any documents that might shed a little bit of light on that aspect of the case. Another area that I'll really be interested in looking at is Lee Oswald's supposed trip to Mexico City in the months before the assassination. As you probably already know, Lee Oswald was accused of visiting and contacting both the Soviet embassy and the Cuban embassy in Mexico City just 6 weeks before the assassination. However, on the day of the assassination, the CIA provided the FBI false pictures and false voice recordings of a supposed Lee Oswald. The pictures that they say are Oswald are hilarious. This person they say is the 24-year-old Lee Harvey Oswald looks like a 50-year-old overweight balding man. It's ridiculous. So was Oswald actually in Mexico City? If so, will there be any documents that finally prove once and for all that in fact he was in Mexico City in the months before the assassination? Another area that I'm very interested in will be looking to see if there are any memos or documents that are released that may shed further light on the CIA's gun running in Cuba. The reason it's so interesting is that we know Jack Ruby was a part of the gun running operation, along with David Ferry and others. So it really offers kind of an area that could lead to further exploration and to further investigation of just how involved Jack Ruby was in the JFK assassination. And it really would disprove the description of Ruby given by intelligence agencies that he was just someone that really wasn't very smart and just acted on the spur of the moment when he killed Oswald on the Sunday following the assassination.
Jack Ruby, I don't know why people deny that he wasn't mobbed up. He was totally mobbed up. You know, from the time he was in Chicago, he had relationships with Sam Giancana. He had relationships with Joe Campisi, who was really the boss of Dallas, who was very close with Carlos Marcelo in New Orleans. And he also had cops on his payroll. He was able to get entry into Oswald. Now, I will tell you this. What I also heard is this. And again, these people don't brag about things like this. They're talking matter-of-factly. You know, the fact that allegedly what I was told, they had a deal with Joe Kennedy, who I know was definitely in touch with and had relationships with Frank Costello during his bootlegging days. There's no question about that. People can deny it. They can. But I've heard that my entire life, too. And that guys in Chicago were instrumental in helping many of the labor unions, you know, vote for the Democrats. Now, Chicago's a mob-run city. You know, it always was, you know, from the days of Capone on forward. And the mob played a part in helping deliver. And that was a very tight election between Kennedy and Nixon. And the deal was that the heat was supposed to be off. And what I heard afterwards, Robert Kennedy, who my father hated, my father believes Robert Kennedy was the one that really pursued him, put him away for 50 years, that the Justice Department was supposed to back off us, and instead they went on even harder. And so if I had to take a lie detector and swear to it, what I've heard my entire life from people in the know, it was definitely mob involvement in that. Jack Ruby was definitely hooked up with us. And look, that wasn't the first time the CIA came to us. I mean, they did it, you know, they tried to assassinate Castro from Cuba. I don't believe that the United States government ever wants to get word out there that the mob had anything to do with assassinating a sitting president. So I don't know if it's ever going to be revealed, but if I had to swear to it, you know, as a matter of life and death for me, based upon everything I heard from the right people, I'd have to say there's no doubt in my mind.
Jefferson, I saw you nodding to quite a lot of that. I mean, I don't think there's any doubt that the Kennedy family had a lot of contact with the mob in varying ways, and there's no doubt that the general perceived wisdom is that they went back on a deal when JFK became president. They reneged on a deal to be more helpful to the mob, and in fact went the other way, and it ended up with Robert Kennedy really targeting them and going after them. So there was clearly a sense of betrayal there from members of the mob at the time. I think that is indisputable. Do you think it's a stretch to say that maybe they were behind all this?
I think Michael had it exactly right. The organized crime rule was to eliminate Oswald, the inconvenient witness, and they used their pawn, Jack Ruby, to do that. I don't think that organized crime organized the whole ambush in Dealey Plaza. That was a very sophisticated operation. And organized crime, when they decide to take somebody out, they don't shoot at a moving target in a public space. You know, they kill them behind doors or give them cement shoes. So the operation itself seems more sophisticated than an organized crime. But Michael's absolutely right about the organized crime role in the events of 1963. Organized crime helped silence the CIA pawn, Lee Harvey Oswald.
So again, just to reiterate, the things we should be looking for is, one, the CIA relationship with organized crime. I think that goes a long way into showing how out of control the CIA was, and JFK knew how out of control they were. That's the reason he fired the director of the CIA, Allen Dulles, and the reason he made the statement that he was going to scatter the CIA into 1,000 pieces and scatter it into the wind. Then some people ask why they wanted him dead. The second thing we should be looking for, the fake churches, fake priests, and the fake reverends that were being allowed and set up by the CIA associates with Cuban paramilitary groups in order to hide illegal activities by those paramilitary groups. 3, Lee Oswald's supposed trip to Mexico City. Did he in fact go? Did he really contact the Soviet embassy and the Cuban embassy? 4, the CIA's gun running to both Batista and Fidel Castro in Cuba. I think that could be very important because of the relationship of Jack Ruby being involved. And finally, I'll be looking to see if any information is released about Lee Harvey Oswald's ties to being a possible informant to the FBI. So there's a lot of information in the next few weeks that we'll be looking to see if we get released. It's not going to be just spelled out for us, and I doubt there's a smoking gun left in the files that has not already been destroyed. There may be a snippet of information here or a comment there from someone that testified that may lead us to further exploration and investigation. Hopefully that will, of course, lead us closer to the truth of the JFK assassination once and for all.
You know what struck me, Mike, was until recently I was always of the view, how the hell do we not know more about this? How do we not know actually what happened. This is the United States of America. This is the president was assassinated, and then the assassin got assassinated. It's like, and then the president's brother is like, how can these still be things that are unresolved? And then, and I saw what happened with Donald Trump, where he is the victim of an attempted assassination. He gets hit on the ear, he nearly dies. The guy is on a roof 150 yards away and he gets killed, so we'll never find out from him. But we still know so little about that young guy, right? We just don't know much about him at all. Motivation, yeah. Why he did it, background, no social media. It was all just very odd and has all just kind of disappeared off the news radar. And so now I'm beginning to understand why we know really so little hard fact about what happened in 63, because even with all the powers we now have of the internet and all the rest of it, we're still none the wiser about what happened in the summer with Donald Trump.
No, that's right. No, and it's interesting. It's if you look at it, we're in two different times, right? Now, the flow of information now in present times, access to information, everybody's got a smartphone, you know, media's playing beat the clock against anybody who's got a smartphone who thinks they're a journalist. So you would imagine that information would have flown much quicker and there would be more transparency after the incident with Donald Trump, the first incident with Donald Trump. And, you know, previously with JFK, with RFK, with MLK, Martin Luther King, that wasn't the case, right? Everybody had to wait for the evening news and information flowed much slower. But it is remarkable after all this time. Look, you know, the commission the congressional law in 92, you know, which said, you know, you have to release this information on JFK unless there is deemed to be some national security concern. You know, that was a 25-year hold. So 2017, it was, you know, Trump who then came in and said, well, okay, some of it's going to have to remain classified. That continues this burning desire on the public's part. And also from a conspiracy point of view, look, nobody wants to imagine that it was one person, right? I'm not saying it was one person. Again, I haven't seen all the evidence. I was a toddler when this happened and the CIA didn't hire me to do it. It's one of those things where nobody wants to believe that something of that magnitude could take place with one person. It has to be a bigger story. Maybe it is, but I understand why conspiracy theories continue as they are, right? And this is a remarkable issue. If they don't release every document, and this is not an executive order that says you will now release a document, it says DOJ and the Director of National Intelligence have 15 days to decide a plan to release the material. They could still hold some of it back. But I think at this stage of the game, look, you know, there's no real sound argument for sources and methods or protection of individuals. Just release it. Right. And again, it may be unsatisfactory. There may not be a smoking gun, but at least you're taking another step towards transparency.
Yeah. And of course, Jefferson Morley, I know that you said that some of the most important files are missing, probably destroyed. These include the official JFK autopsy report, which contradicts supposedly the lone gunman, a single bullet theory, the recording of a phone call between Lyndon Johnson and J. Edgar Hoover on the morning of the assassination, the CIA files on Lee Harvey Oswald's Russian connections. These all seem very, very important, significant things, which if they have just been destroyed or disappeared for whatever reason, then this could end up being a bit of a damp squib. But that would then prompt the question, well, if it's a damp squib, why have you not just revealed all this before?
Yeah. Yeah, the law, you know, the law is very clear, and it was supposed to have been, it had a 2017 sunset provision. So the CIA has blown the deadline by 8 years. So naturally, people are getting, you know, getting a little impatient. But I'll say this, you know, Piers, yes, a lot has been destroyed, but you can't understand what's going to come out in the next few weeks if you don't understand what's come out in the last few years. The pre-assassination Oswald file, what the doctors saw, the CIA's own internal investigation. And there are documents in the collection that apply directly to these matters that should be declassified. And I want to say this, you know, I've been at this a long time and I have high expectations, but I also have hard experience. The CIA knows how to push back. They know how to get a president's ear. They know how to make him defer to their wishes. It happened to Biden. It happened to Trump. And it could definitely happen again. What's key is that people understand we have a benchmark, a dozen documents. If we get all 12, Trump gets an A. If we get 9 out of the 12, Trump gets a B. If we get 6 out of the 12, we know how strong the CIA remains. It's not complicated. James Angleton's testimony to the Church Committee in 1975, 120-page document, heavily redacted. Angleton controlled the Oswald file from 1959 to 1963, so that document should be made public immediately. CIA surveillance operations in Mexico City that picked up on Oswald, there's a 77-page report on those, heavily redacted. That should be declassified. So we're not, this isn't a fishing expedition, and we're not looking for smoking guns. We're looking at the fact pattern that will establish that the government's account of the crime is not correct, and we need a better explanation.
And Michael Francis, I mean, if I was an American, Michael Francis, I mean, you have a right to know this stuff. I mean, this involves the assassination Absolutely. Of one of your presidents, the assassination of potentially the next president in Bobby Kennedy, and then the assassination, obviously, of Martin Luther King as well. We haven't got to that, but in terms of JFK in particular, the American people, I think, have a fundamental right to know this stuff.
Absolutely, Pearson. What I would like to see if they deny the fact that Jack Ruby had mob connections. Because if they deny that, then I know this whole thing is a sham. Because he absolutely right. 100% mob connections his entire life, going back to Chicago. Yeah. And then I think, Campisi, who was a very powerful mob guy in Dallas, he had, connections with all the strip clubs and the places that Ruby was involved in. Because you don't hear much about Jack Ruby. They just, he was some lone nut, you know. If they lie about his connections, then that says it all to me. I wouldn't believe anything that came out of that from that point on, because he was definitely connected to us.
Let me ask you, Michael, with the mob theory, Michael, it's such a big thing to do, whoever you are, to be involved in the assassination of an American president. You were in the mob a long time at a pretty high level. Could you ever countenance the idea that would happen, that you would have the mob in any way, any one of the families being directly complicit in the involved assassination of a president?
The answer to me is yes, because, it was during that time. I always say this, Pierce, the golden years of the mob in the United States was really from the late 40s, mid-40s, right through to the mid-80s when Giuliani went wild with the RICO Act and put a lot of damage in. We had a lot of power at that time. You're talking about, 50, 60, 70. We had a lot of power. And Sam Giancana, very powerful guy, Carlos Marcelli, all the five families in New York. We had power and connections, and it's not inconceivable. Again, the CIA, I think it's a matter of fact that they came to us on two occasions. And why would they not come to us at this point in time, too? We had the ability. And look, Jack Ruby had the connections. He had a lot of connections with the police department. He was able to get into that area that night. I don't know if they questioned him. I mean, the guy had a gun on him. How did he get in there at that point in time? Look, it's absolutely not out of the question. And like I said, Pierce, if you had to give me a lie detector test and my life depended on it, everything that I've heard points to mob involvement in that. And again, I want to, reiterate what this other gentleman said. I'm not saying we were involved from day one, but I know that we hated the Kennedys. There was no question about that. As a matter of fact, I think there was one, Sam Giancana was caught on tape saying, we killed the wrong Kennedy, because it was really Bobby, from what I understand, that went against Joe Kennedy and John Kennedy and still continued going after the mob when he was supposed to back off. And I think I heard that there was some kind of discussion about that Frank Sinatra came back and told Giancana they can't control Bobby. I heard that also. There was a lot of stuff pointing to the fact, but I'm telling you that the key is here, if they deny that Jack Ruby was not all mobbed up and had a mob connection, this whole thing is false.
If you like what you hear every week and want to learn more about the assassination, please pick up my book, The End of Innocence, The Assassination of President John F. Kennedy. It's available right now on Amazon, or you can find it at www.endofinnocencejfk.com. In honor of the 61st anniversary of the assassination of John F. Kennedy, I'm sending out signed copies of my book. If you would like one of these, please email me at endofinnocencejfk@gmail.com. The price is $40 for the soft cover and $60 for the hardcover, plus shipping and handling. I can promise you won't be disappointed in the book. It's an oversized coffee table style book. The book is over 500 pages with almost 1,000 pictures. You won't be disappointed. And hey, send me your comments about the book or this podcast at endofinnocencejfk@gmail.com. We'll see you next week.